And we are on air for Fan for Racing's NASCAR weekend preview. And this week we are previewing the Circuit of the Americas down in Texas. And this is actually Thursday, March the 21st. And I'm really looking forward to this one because for the first time in a long time, we've got a full schedule of races to preview. Joining me for today's show is an old friend of ours, Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. That's ironic you introduced me that way. My friend from Minnesota is down here with me for the week, and we've been discussing of how much older we are now. Thank you very much for that reminder all the way around.
Well, I only said that because this is your usual slot, and you've been filling in for us on Monday nights, and Brian's been filling in for you on Thursday during the podcast. So this is, I think, the first one you've done this year, isn't it?
You know, I think it,
Thursday.
I think it actually has. You're right. I think it is the first actual full preview. I know I jumped in Hot Topics one day just for a little bit, but you're right. I think it is the full, and I knew what you meant. It was just ironic. Me and my buddy have been talking about that, how we are approaching a certain milestone. I know we got some milestones to talk about at the Truck Series. Yeah, we're approaching a milestone ourselves.
Exactly. Okay, so it looks like it might be just you and me on Hot Topics here in a little while. But before we get to Hot Topics, we are going to start with some short track news and some upcoming races. Afterward, we're going to preview the ARCA East Series opener, first race of the year for the ARCA East at Park Lake Speedway this weekend. And, of course, we'll give you some updates from the ARCA Menards and the ARCA West Series as well. After that, we will preview the NASCAR Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series. And all three series are racing at Circuit of the Americas this weekend. So that's why I'm so excited, because I don't think we, other than maybe Daytona, we haven't had a weekend yet that we've had all four series racing. So super excited to have that happening.
Yeah, because I think, well, Phoenix had the ARCA West / ARCA. Oh, no, one of the other, which ones didn't travel out there? I take that back. The trucks. Yeah, there we go. The trucks were off that weekend. You're right. This is the first full four race since Daytona.
So we've got a lot to talk about, and I gave you some notes over on our teams page. So let's go ahead and go to that and go ahead and get started. We've got a lot here. Okay, starting with the dirt and short track, some of the information that we have there. Do you want to start that, Jay? You can do the dirt I'll do the short tracks.
Okay, under the dirt, we got this weekend-ending win. Giovanni Scalzi surged into the early World Outlaw Sprint Car Series points lead. Again, it's a little early in the season, but points matter from the word get-go, so... Alex Neaton covered it. You can check on it on worldoutlaws.com. And the next one is new Princeton Raceway promoter Jason Walls is eager to open the track for the first time since 2021. And that's on a site called Outside Groove by Mike Adaskev. I'm not sure if I said that right. That's the first time I've seen that
close
name.
Enough.
So, but it'll... worth checking out there on Outside Groove.
Okay. And then in the short track world, excuse me, all of a sudden I got a tickle. You're going to have to cover it, Dave.
All right. Starting with the short track news, the Z-Max Cars Tours is going to kick off New River All-American Speedway's racing weekend this weekend. That's covered on Short Track Scene. Then we got a bunch of information here from the media guide of Five Flags Speedway, Pensacola, Florida, for their opening weekend. So I'm going to try and hit some highlight news from that. It's a triple header as drivers from all across the country and Canada come down. The three-day weekend will begin on Friday night, the 22nd of March here, Local division openers will be the Outlaws, Pure Stocks, and Sportsmen. Then on Saturday, the 23rd in the afternoon, it'll be the Super Late Models hitting the track for practice. The ARCA Menards Series East opens up their 2024 season with the Pensacola 150. The Crown Stocks will also be in action for their first action for the season opener. And then the Sunshine State 200, that'll be held Sunday afternoon. That's for the Super Late Models of the ASA Stars National Tour. Now, Saturday and Sunday also have other activities of on-track autograph sessions for fans to meet their different favorite drivers, or other drivers might not be their favorite, but.
Yeah, it's really amazing that Five Bike Speedway has such a huge event this weekend all around the ARCA Menards Series East, opening up their season with that Pensacola 150. I'm super excited about this.
It is, and you mentioned that being their season opener. It's the first of eight races on the 2024 schedule for them.
It is indeed. Tickets are still available. There's a special three-day ticket package that fans can take advantage of if you're down there in that Pensacola area. I would highly recommend that you go out there because the ASA Stars National Tour is also huge, and I think you'll really enjoy that. For those of us that can't buy a ticket and go to the track, you can stream the Sunshine State 200 at tracktv.com on Sunday, March the 24th. That's the race for the ASA Stars National Tour. There's going to be a TV rebroadcast of the race on MAB TV for that Sunshine State 200 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That's Monday, April the 1st. And that's part of their All-American Racing Monday lineup. So that's pretty cool. But there's some storylines in that ASA National Tours as well. You want to hit the first one, Jay?
Well, I'll cover. I already kind of hit on the second one, with that being the opener and the first of eight races for the ARCA Menards Series East. But with that, the local divisions mentioned they get their shot during a big weekend of racing. Just as we talk about when the East or the ARCA Menards Series runs with the NASCAR Top 3 Series, these local divisions of Outlaws, Pure Stocks, and Sportsmen racing on Friday night, the Crown Stocks on Saturday, they get to race around, maybe not necessarily with, but around their next, which is the ARCA Menards Series East. So that's how they get noticed by the East Series and possibly make some connections and move up.
Exactly right, and this is really huge, having both of those, the ASA Stars National Tour, as well as the ARCA Menards Series East, at 5-5 Speedway for that same weekend. It is a very huge deal. Now, the ASA Stars National Tour, they debuted back in last year. This was the first year that they ran, so they're in their second season with this year. The first ever event for the series was at the site that they're going to be at this year. They had 36 cars, and there are currently 30 plus that are on the entry list for this weekend. So it's really great to see them complete that full year debut season and now start their second season of the ASA Stars National Tour.
Mentioned it being early in the season. This is the second event for the season of the ASA Stars National Tour. The first event was held at New Smyrna Speedway back in Florida. They had over 50 cars entered in the event, with 32 taking the green flag. Bubba Pollard coming out on top out of Senoia, Georgia, with that victory.
Yeah, that was all part of the World of Asphalt World Series, or however they call that. You know what I'm talking about?
That's right. They did have that listed as the World Series.
Yes. So really, really cool to see them back on the track again. Also, you might remember Bubba Pollard, along with former track champion Jake Finch, Gio Ruggiero, they're all scheduled to run in the ARCA Menards Series as well as the ASA Stars Tour. So those both of those will be two big races the one on Saturday night and the second on Sunday afternoon. So Bubba Pollard is a big name in short track racing. And I know later on this year he's going to have a start in the Xfinity Series with NASCAR as well.
I was going to say, that backs up my previous statement. You read my mind there, mentioned getting noticed when other teams or drivers, organizations are around, and that's Bubba Pollard has gotten that opportunity with Junior Motorsports. And now he does come into Five Flag Speedway, having won the first three marquee super late model events to kick off this 2024 season. So a lot of eyes going to be on him, Bubba, there, to see if he can make it four in a row.
Yeah, he's kind of dominated the start of the 2024 season, and everybody's gunning to beat him. So it's going to be make for a very interesting article. Next, I'm going to kind of highlight some of the media coverage that's going on about some of the drivers and the events that are taking place out at Five Flag Speedway. Casey Roderick leads the ASA Star standings coming to Pensacola. So you can read about that at StarsNationalTour.com and learn more about Casey Roderick.
Another one you want to check out is the pair of young drivers trying to do the ARCA ASA double. And I'm trying to see what website that comes from. That's on the ASA Stars National Tour homepage.
Yes, it's the same site. And so is this next one. Bubba Pollard is running for 5K family funeral and cremation double down bonus. So there's a big bonus for these drivers to win the ASA National Tour this weekend. Also, there's more at that same website.
Yeah, you got Nason has submitted his bid for the 2024 title run. So you can check that one out as well. And then they got Bubba Pollard running for a 5K family funeral and cremation double down bonus. So check that out.
Yeah. Yeah, I just mentioned that one, so that was a repeat. Teammates Ruggiero and Butcher are among the favorite Pensacola Stars this weekend. So we'll see which one of them can beat Bubba Pollard this week.
Yeah, I find that odd that they list them as, it says among the favorites, but obviously we've talked a lot about Bubba Pollard. I think he would have to be at the very near the top of the list.
Yes, yes. I'm not sure that we're going to have time for the rest of what I posted over here, but what I am going to do is refer everybody. They've got a feature on Flow Racing now called This Week's Racing News on Flow Racing. Several storylines in the dirt late model category on that page. And then they've also got this week's Flow Racing live schedule. So you can find out, and there are a lot of races going on between the 21st and the 24th that you can watch. And they'll tell you how you can also watch the American Flat Track, the 2024 American Flat Track at Sonoya's Short Track. So I'm going to refer everybody to Flow Racing for the rest of the information we had hoped to have time to talk about. But there's some other things we can refer to here. The Sportsman Spectacular season has started, and you can check out the races that are going to be in your area. This is the 2024 IHRA World Finals, and they're going to be at Knoxville Dragway in Maynardville, Tennessee, Beacon Dragway in Paducah, Kentucky, South Carolina Motorplex in Nisi, South Carolina, Gleason Raceway Park in Gleason, Tennessee, Kilcare Raceway in Xenia, Ohio, Music City Raceway in Goodlettsville, Tennessee, Dragway 42 in West Salem, Ohio, Humboldt County Dragway in Humboldt, Iowa, Albuquerque Dragway in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Bunker Hill Drag Strip in Bunker Hill, Indiana, and Quaker City Motorsports Park in Salem, Ohio. Their finale will be July 27th at Etheridge Motorsports Park in Etheridge, Tennessee. So that's the International Hot Rod Association, And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this season. So I thought I'd make sure everybody knew about those races coming up. But, Jay, we've got to move on to the ARCA Menards series now.
Can I throw one more quick one out there? I know we talked about it the other night.
Sure.
Of Hudson O'Neill vacating the Rocket House car. If you want to check that out, Flow Racing has a lot of coverage on it, but T-Mac, Tim McCready is the one that is going to take over that ride, the house car, and Hudson O'Neill has announced at least a part-time schedule already in another car, so you can get all that information on Flow Racing, but I wanted to throw that out there real quick.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you did. I appreciate it. Okay, moving on now to the ARCA Menards Series East season opener, the Pensacola 150 at Five Flag Speedway. That will be this Saturday, March the 23rd, time 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 7:30 p.m. Central. It will be streamed live on Flow Racing. They'll race 150 laps to cover a distance of 75 miles. It's really the 38th season dating back to 1987, Jay.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've already talked about that being the season opener, but yeah, of the history there. And this race will be the 595th in ARCA Menards Series East history, and it's the 7th now at Five Flags Speedway in their history as well.
The race is also the 595th in the ARCA Menards Series East history and the 7th at Five Flags Speedway in East Series history. So there's quite a few previous winners here, too.
And you're going to recognize some of these names. In 2013, it was Ben Kennedy, Ben Rhodes in 2014, Sam Mayer in 2020, and Sammy Smith 2021 and 22. And obviously, a friend coming from Minnesota, we talked about this one, William Sawalich in 2023. Did we lose you, Sharon? All right, I don't hear Sharon all of a sudden. We got Joe Gibbs Racing has picked up the last three ARCA Menards Series East races at Five Flags Speedway. The first two were with Sammy Smith, and then the most recent winner was William Sawalich. They're driving for Joe Gibbs. The team has led a total of 452 of a possible 600 laps over those three races, to include all 200 in last year's race by William Sawalich.
I'm sorry, Jay. I did have it on mute because the phone was ringing. So I apologize.
No problem. Pick it up there with Sawalich returning to defend that East Series championship if you want.
Okay. Yeah, Sawalich, he's the champion from last year. He won that East Series championship. He's been racing some of the Truck Series races this season, and now he's already visited Victory Lane this year when he won the ARCA Menards Series ARCA West combination race at Phoenix in March. So I know he is definitely looking to defend his championship, and he's going to be one of the ones to watch out at Five Flags Speedway this weekend.
Another one, if you haven't already seen, Connor Zillish has filed an entry to drive the number 28 Pinnacle Racing Group Chevrolet for team owner Mark Webb. That team has won the two East races last year with Luke Fenhouse driving at Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway and then at Iowa Speedway with Zillish, who is part of the winning team in the LMP2 class at both the Rolex 24 and the 24 Hours of Sebring. So he'll do double duty on Saturday. He's also scheduled to make his NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series debut at the Circuit of Americas on Saturday afternoon before traveling back to Pensacola to start his title run for the ARCA Menards Series East. That's quite a commute from Texas to Florida.
It is. It is. Connor Zillich has a very busy weekend for sure. And, you know, he's such a star in that LMP2 class for the Rolex. And the 12-hour Sebring, they just ran that last weekend. So he's been a very busy guy. Now, we've talked about Bubba Pollard, the super late model superstar. He won last weekend's Rattler 250 out at South Alabama Speedway, and now he's going to be driving in that Arkham Menards Series East debut and their season opener. He'll be driving that number one Toyota for Phoenix Racing. His teammate is the team owner's son, Jake Finch. And Jake Finch won the Baby Rattler 150 last weekend. He finished second in the 250. So it was a big weekend for them in that Rattler 250 and the Baby Rattler 125. And Pollard and Finch are also planning to both race in the ASA Stars National Tour race at Five Flags Speedway as well. So a couple of other drivers that are going to be super busy this weekend.
And that's why they're up there at the top of favorites with that record going starting the season. Now, the reigning ASA CRA Super Series and the ASA Southern Super Series champion, Gio Ruggiero, has filed an entry. He'll be in the number 20 Toyota for Venturini Motorsports. Ruggiero finished second to Sawalich at Phoenix Raceway 2 weeks ago, expected to compete for the East Championship in addition to continuing to race in the super late model ranks throughout 2024.
All right. People will recognize this name. He's done a lot with NASCAR. Ben Kennedy actually holds the track qualifying record for the Arkham Menards Series East at Five Flags Speedway. He set that record back in 2013 at 17.125 seconds or 105.109 miles per hour. I always respected Ben Kennedy for doing what he's done. He's been down in the ranks of racing, and he's advanced very quickly throughout the ranks of NASCAR as well, his family-owned organization. So really cool to see him still holding on to that record.
Now, the race record for the series at Five Flags Speedway, that was set by Sammy Smith in 2021 when he picked up his victory. Time was 76.694 miles per hour, or the speed was 76.694 miles per hour. The time was 1 hour, 18 minutes, and 14 seconds.
Wow. That's pretty good. Now, the race distance has been adjusted for this race to 150 laps. The distance for the first two East races at Five Flag Speedway, that took place back in 13 and 14. That's the same distance that they had in 2013 and 14. The distance in 21, 22, and 23 was 200 laps. So they've gone back to their original 150 laps for this weekend.
I know I'm not in charge and understand all of it, but I'm a little disappointed by that of the extra or the lack of the extra 50 laps, but again, I'm sure they have their reasons. So now the record number of lead changes in an E-Series race is 6, and that was set in 2021 and then tied in 2022. The fewest lead changes would be 0 back in 2013. I don't remember who – oh, that was Ben Kennedy, and then 2023 with William Sawalich.
Wow. Okay, now the records for the most cautions in the series for the Arkham Menards Series East, specifically at Five Flags Speedway, that's 9. That was for a record 39 laps just recently in 2022. The fewest cautions is just 1 for a record low 4 laps, and that was just last year. So let's see if they can do that again. That would be fun.
Well, and fun was always overtime if needed. In the Arkham Menards Series East Series, want to go over their rules. Should that race need to be extended into overtime, it'll be an unlimited attempt at a 2-lap green-white checkered flag finish. Should the caution flag be displayed during the white flag, then it'll be an unlimited attempt at a 1-lap green-white together finish.
Okay. And then we'll cover this again just to make sure everybody has the information. The Pensacola 150 will be streamed live on Flow Racing starting at 8:20 p.m. Eastern Time. So that would be 7:20 p.m. Central Time. So really cool to see them starting their season. I'm excited about it, actually, that they are starting their season. Now, we're going to get into the the Truck Series now, because they're racing at Circuit of the Americas. Before we do that, I want to make sure we update everybody on when the next ARCA races are going to be taking place. And, you know, there's a nice article, too, over at ARCARacing.com, the Pensacola Double, and it features Bubba Pollard, Jake Bench, and Gio Ruggiero doing double duty this weekend. That's an article you don't want to miss. And they've also got the full entry list over there as well. Jay, why don't you preview that real quick and let me know if there's any surprises on that list. There is the next race for the ARCA Menards Series is the General Tire 200, and that's going to be on April the 20th. We'll have to wait for that one out at Talladega Super Speedway, and it will be televised on Fox Sports 1. But Jay and I will, of course, preview it for you before that, the Thursday before that race happens. We've been talking about the ARCA East racing this weekend. The ARCA West will have their next race, the West Coast Stock Car Hall of Fame 150, presented by Napa Auto Parts on March the 30th at 10 p.m. Eastern Time out at Irwindale Speedway. And that race will be available via live streaming at Flow Racing. If you haven't signed up yet, make sure you sign up in time to watch those races. So we'll check that out. And anybody you see that stands out on the entry list this weekend that we haven't already mentioned?
Well, I don't know if you know this. Some people don't like to be put on the spot. Apparently, my computer did not like to be, okay, here we go, put on the spot as
I tried to
pull that up real quick. No, that was, I don't know what it didn't like that. But let's see, a couple that names anyway-wise, Mike Basham is going to be in a Hillenburg machine as well as Zachary Tinkle. I know we talked a little bit about it on the Monday night. Presley Seurat is going to be in a Hillenburg machine as well. Those are the only ones of other than normal series entries that I see on here as far as standing out. Again, most of those are regulars when it comes to the ARCA Menards Series, East Series. I will say this, and I'm trying to think where I read it. Off the top of my head, I don't remember, but 18 entries. We've seen high number list driver entry lists so far. Over the last couple of years especially, but there are 18 drivers here for this East Series opener. That's a big number. We've seen it as low as 12, 13, so good signs for the ARCA Menards Series East season.
Absolutely. Okay, now it's time for us to move on then to the NASCAR Truck Series. I'm going to do it real quick. I know Brian and I have been doing a little bit of a fantasy preview for everybody. Brian's not here to give us the DraftKings side of it, but I will give you the box scores that I have available for the drivers. And I don't think Kyle Busch is on the entry list for the Circuit of the Americas in the Truck Series this week, which kind of surprises me a little bit. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jay.
Yeah, let me scroll up here while you start giving the odds. I'll look that up, guys. There were still one or two that had the TBA to be announced. So let me see if he fits in any of those.
Okay. Of course, the top of the list is Kyle Busch. He has a driver rating at 136. And in two races there, his average finishing spot is 2.5. Zane Smith, I'm not sure if he's racing this weekend either, but his is the next highest at 135.8. And his average finishing position in two races is 1.0. So I would put him pretty high up there on the list of drivers if he's on that entry list. If Ben Rhodes is next, and that will complete the drivers that have a drop box score over 100. Ben Rhodes has an average finish position of 7.0. His box score is 104.4. So just something to be aware of there. Another driver that has the same driver rating in two races, in addition to Ben Rhodes, is Nick Sanchez. So he's one to think about. Even though his driver rating is lower, it's under the 100 mark, his average finishing position is 7.0, just like Ben Rhodes. And Coy Heim is even better. His average finishing position in one race is 6.0. So there's a couple of other drivers that are outside the 100 mark for the box score, but they have great average finishing positions. And I might as well throw Tyler Ankrum in this list as well. His average finishing position is 5.5. So those are some drivers you might want to consider picking this weekend.
And I would have to say Kyle Busch is not. The to-be-announced one is Young Motorsports, the number 20 of Tyler Young. It is a Chevrolet. However, the number 7 from Spire Motorsports, which is generally the one Kyle Busch would drive, is the truck that Connor Zilish is in. So I would have to say that he will not be in this weekend's event.
What about Zane Smith? Do you see Zane Smith on the list?
Let's see. He was in the number 91. No, Jack Wood is in 91 for McAnally. I did not see his on there either.
Okay, we'll have to wait for Brian to come back to give us the DraftKings info for the races we're covering when he gets back. But and he'll be back next week. So, just a little bit of extra information that we've been given lately that I think fans really appreciate. The NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series will be racing the Expel 225 at Circuit of the Americas this Saturday, March the 23rd. It is, of course, a road course, and we love our road course races. They'll start around 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. It will be covered, though, by Fox Sports 1 with pre-race coverage starting at 12:30 p.m. Eastern and radio coverage on MRN as well as SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll race a distance of 143.22 miles over 42 laps. The first stage is just 12 laps, ending on lap 12. Second stage is going to end on lap 26 for 14 laps. And then the final stage will end on the last lap, lap number 42. So we've been going top down this time. Jay, I forgot to mention that to you.
All right, that is a change, yes. Let me scroll back up to the top of the Truck Series section here. All right, looking at the road course racing in the great state of Texas. Talking about the NASCAR Truck Series heading to the Circuit of Americas. Now, that is producing, there have been three races at COTA, produced two different winners and three different pole winners. Of those three, none have been won from the pole or first starting position. Go back in history, it's a Front Row Motorsports number 38 that has seemed to be the lucky truck at the 3.41-mile road course. Todd Gillen drove it to victory in the inaugural COTA race in 2021, and then Zane Smith did the same thing in 22 and 23. Now, this year, it'll be Sunoco Rookie of the Year candidate Lane Riggs that'll have his chance to bring it back to victory lane. It will be the rookie's first Truck Series race on a road course. Looking at the others who have etched their name in the iconic tracks record books, some stats there. The race record belongs to Zane Smith, set in 2023 at 77 miles per hour. Qualifying record is Ross Chastain, also in 23, at 91.877 miles an hour. The wins, obviously, two for Zane Smith. A little bit of short history there, but he holds that. Most top tens, Ben Rhodes, Zane Smith, and Tyler Ankrum have all three. Most laps led, again, if he's in the race, he's in it to win it. Most laps led goes to Kyle Busch at 43.
Now, they'll have practice that will be on Friday, March the 22nd at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time on FS1. And then SiriusXM will also have that coverage, as well as the Kometic Gasket poll qualifying that will take place at 4 p.m. Eastern. So fans will be able to tune in for both practice and qualifying. But we're going to have some top performers that we're going to be up the track this weekend, especially for the road course. So throughout history, including the inaugural season, there are always been some ringers, if you will, that come in and race on that track. So before the trucks take to the track this weekend, we're going to take a look at some of those top road course performers. And in total, the Truck Series has run 32 road courses all time from 95 to the present. That's given them 25 different winners. And the leader there is Joe Ruttman, the NASCAR Hall of Famer NASCAR Hall of Famer Ron Hornaday Jr. They both have three road course wins apiece. So we'll see if anybody can come up to that. Only two road course races that have won previously are in the field this weekend, and they include Ben Rhodes, who won the Daytona road course in 2021, and Corey Heim won on a road course at Mid-Ohio in 2023. So we've got drivers from far and wide that are entered this weekend, but everybody wants to race on the iconic Circuit of the Americas road course. And these guys are no exception this weekend. We can go every other one if you want, Jay. I'll start with Jack Hawksworth, Vassar Sullivan, Lexus standout and reigning IMSA GTD Pro Champion. Jack Hawksworth will be joining forces with Tricon Garage this weekend. He'll be piloting that number one Mobile One Toyota Tundra for TRD this weekend. The Bradford, UK native, made a NASCAR Xfinity Series start back in 2019 at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, and that was for Joe Gibbs Racing. He qualified on the outside front row. He won a stage, and he ended up finishing the race in 15th.
Well, I got a name, if you will, Marco Andretti from Nazareth, Pennsylvania, and debuted back in 2023 at Mid-Ohio, finished 19th. But this weekend, he'll be behind the number 04 Roper Racing Chevrolet. Obviously, he's a third-generation NTT IndyCar Series driver with over 250 IndyCar starts, having picked up two victories. But he's also started 18 consecutive Indianapolis 500s. Now, additionally, Andretti is the reigning superstar racing experience at SRX Series champion as he beat out Ryan Newman and Bobby Labonte to win the title last year.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Marco Andretti racing in the ARCA Menards Series this year. I think it's going to be fun to see him build his career within the stock car category, and I can't wait to see what he does this weekend. Connor Zilich, we mentioned him earlier. He's a 17-year-old making his Truck Series debut at COTA. He's going to be driving that number 7 Jay mentioned it for Spire Motorsports, so that's a Chevrolet. He's a very accomplished karting and road racer who most notably was part of the ERA Motorsports LMP2 class, who won the 2024 at Daytona earlier this year. That made him the second youngest driver ever to win that iconic race. He's also a 10-time Trans Am TA2 class race winner and a central component of Trackhouse Racing's driver development program now. He hails from Mooresville, North Carolina, and is the 2022 Mazda MX-5 championship runner-up, where he also claimed the Rookie of the Year honors for Hickson Motorsports. So another driver that fans be looking forward to seeing what he does in stock cars. And I believe he's going to be racing in the ARCA Menards Series as well.
That's what I was going to say. You talked about his schedule. You got to be able to keep up with him if you're going to follow him, because he will be done transferring, going from Texas back to Florida. So He is one
that's
of those
right,
of getting in a car
right.
anytime and anywhere he can.
That's right. You've got another good one now, coming up here.
That is true. Vicente Salales, his dream becoming a reality for him this weekend. He's an eNASCAR Coca-Cola iRacing Series competitor. Now, we've talked about that, the iRacing deal, making his Craftsman Truck Series debut. He'll be in the number 20 for Young's Motorsport Chevrolet. He's 21 years old. He's the latest driver with that eNASCAR experience to compete in a NASCAR National Series event, joining the likes of Dale Earnhardt Jr., William Byron, Josh Berry, Parker Retzlaff, Caden Honeycutt, and I want to add Rajah Caruth to that list, as
yeah.
Tyler Hudson talked about the other night. So that's an interesting one. We've seen them have success. So can you translate that e-racing, i-racing experience over to on track?
Absolutely. Now, I've got the next one here, and you'll recognize where he's coming from. Carter Partouche from Skip Barber Racing School he's the director of the instructors at Skip Barber Racing School. And I believe, Jay, you went there a few years ago. Was that
I, no, Mike has raced there. Remember, Mike has raced on that track. I said that is one. It's on the other side of Birmingham, between Birmingham and Talladega is where it's located. I have not had the chance to stop and visit the facility, but Mike has raced there.
Oh, okay. Okay, very cool. Okay, anyway, Carter Partouche will be making his Craftsman Truck Series debut behind the wheel of the 22 for Raume Brothers Racing Ford. So he's 29 years old, and he'll be making his debut there. He previously competed in the GT4 America, the IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge, and TC America. So it's really cool to see these drivers coming from so many other disciplines to race with NASCAR. I love it.
Well, I find that one interesting. The old saying is that those who can't do, teach. Let's see if this one is teach you how to do it by doing it. So we'll see how Carter Partouche ends up there, but it will be interesting to see the teacher be out there and really show them how to do it.
Absolutely.
Now the last one, I don't know that he needs any driving lessons. We won't go into that of here, but Ross Chastain, he's a NASCAR Cup Series regular now, going to be piloting the number 45 Nice Motorsports Chevrolet this weekend. He's made 51 starts for Nice Motorsports since the 2018 Truck Series season. This includes 2019, when he ran full time, picking up three race wins, finished second in the championship standings. Now, Chastain is also won at Charlotte with Nice Motorsports back in 2022. Last season, his first race at COTA with them, he started on the pole and went on to finish fifth. And that's one of those of these drivers that want the experience. Some of them, it's just the enjoyment, different partnerships. Obviously, he has a long-standing relationship with Nice Motorsports, probably just fills in when they need him or can. So interesting dynamic there when you see Ross Chastain back in the trucks.
It is indeed. Okay, speaking of the Truck Series, Chevrolet is on a hot streak. They've won every Truck Series race since October 21 of last year at Homestead Miami Speedway. That race was won by Carson Hocevar in the number 42 Nice Motorsports Chevrolet. The last non-Chevrolet to win was the number 31 Front Row Motorsports Ford driven by Brett Moffitt, and that was at Talladega in September of 2023. So Chevrolet's been on a roll. We'll have to see if they can continue that. Chevrolet drivers are looking to power the manufacturer to its fifth straight victory this season in the XPEL 225 at Circuit of the Americas this weekend. Can they keep that roll going?
Well, and that was across the board. The Truck Series here, the only one that Chevrolet hasn't given up that grip on, is John Hunter Nemechek picked up a victory in the Xfinity Series for Toyota, And then we had Denny Hamlin pick up a victory at Bristol that ended Chevrolet's dominance across all three series. So that the Truck Series is their only remaining where they say they're undefeated.
That's right.
And I get the category. This is where I thought I was going to start anyway, but talking about upcoming milestones for the Craftsman Truck Series, none of them are about age. As Jeff and I said, we were discussing the milestone of age. This is about most of them for starts, I believe. Coming up at Martinsville for several of them. Matt Crafton, he'll make his 550th career start there at Martinsville. He leads the Truck Series in those starts, all of which are consecutive. A couple of young guns, new drivers anyway. Tanner Gray, he'll make his 100th start at Martinsville. Bailey Curry will hit the 50 mark. There's the 50 I was looking for. Or not looking for, but is. then moving on to Darlington a little later, Christian Eckes will make his 100th start. Ty Majeski will hit 75 at Darlington. And the last one is Corey Heim. And already, we just started using his name when it comes to the Truck Series, but he's already looking to make his 50th start as well.
Isn't that amazing? Time really flies when you're having fun, Jay.
Right, yeah. I think I need to have more fun.
Okay, the Xfinity Series will be racing this weekend as well. They will be racing the Focus South 250 at Circuit of the Americas on Saturday, the 23rd, at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Fox Sports 1 will have the pre-race coverage starting at 4 Eastern Time, and radio coverage will be on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll race a distance of 156.86 miles over 46 laps. Their first stage is 14 laps. The second stage ending on lap 14. Second stage is 16 laps. I believe that's right. Ending on lap 30. And then the final stage is another 16 laps ending on lap 46. So we've got a lot here in the Xfinity Series to cover as well, Jay.
Well, we can look for them to get rowdy in Texas. That's part of the tradition of Texas, if you will, just kind of overall. But plus, they had a weekend off last week to regroup. So they're kind of recharged and ready to roar again here on the road course at Circuit of America. Again, that is a 3.41-mile road course. Now, we've only had three Xfinity Series races at COTA. Again, the stats produced two different race winners, Kyle Busch in 2021, and then A.J. Allmendinger went back-to-back in 22 and 23. Three different pole winners, Kyle Busch in 21, Ty Gibbs in 22, and then A.J. Allmendinger in 2023. Two of the three here have been won by the pole. Kyle Busch and Allmendinger did it in their races respectively. Now, they don't call Allmendinger the king of road courses for nothing. Not only is he the winningest driver in Xfinity Series history on road courses, but he holds a few of the records here at the track in Austin, Texas. That includes the race record, 75.263 miles per hour. Qualifying record, though, was at 92.173 miles per hour. Has two victories, which is the most. All three being top fives as well as top tens then, obviously, and led the most laps at 58. And they also, for the Xfinity Series, will kick off the weekend. They got a practice session. That'll be Friday, March 22nd. Be at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, as well as pole qualifying following then at 6, both of which, and those are Eastern times if I didn't say it, both of those will be televised on FS1, your cable company.
Yeah, here's more verification that Allmendinger is the road course king. when it comes to wins on road courses, nobody does it better than Colleague Racing's A.J. Allmendinger. The stellar wheelman from California has amassed an impressive record of 11 road course Xfinity Series victories across six road course tracks. He's got three at the road course at Charlotte. Actually, that's four at the road course in Charlotte, dating from 19, 20, 21, and 22. He's got two at COTA in 22 and 23, Mid-Ohio 2 at 13 and 21. The Indianapolis Road Course, he won there in 22, as well as at Portland International. And at the Road America, he won there in 2013. This weekend, he's going to strut his skills around that 3.41 mile Coda Road Course. He's a track that he's visited Victory Lane in the last two consecutive seasons. So let's see if he can make it three this weekend at Coda.
Well, I was just looking. Unfortunately, it's Brian's turn to pick for the Xfinity Series, our fantasy picks, and we're still early, and I think I got to go at the end. So something tells me I'm not going to get to pick A.J. Allmendinger.
I don't think either one of us will.
Yeah. I know one that we won't be able to pick as he went first, and that may be the new road course sheriff. So as they say, of if you're the king, everybody's gunning for you. A.J.'s got some competition when it comes to possibly that record, as there's a young gun making a name for himself on the last season road courses, and that's Junior Motorsports' Sam Mayer. Might give him a run for his money, as the 20-year-old Mayer, in his first full season in Xfinity Series in 2022, didn't post a win until July of 23, when he took the checkered flag at his home track, the Road America in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. From there, Mayer became a force to be reckoned with on tracks with turns left and right, pulled off his second win at Watkins Glen, and then his third came at the Charlotte Motor Speedway Roval. Now, although he hasn't found victory lane at Coda yet, he's put up some strong finishes. His debut in 2022 was fifth, and then posted a seventh-place finish in last year's race. And let me tell you, it would not come at a better time than this year, as he has struggled out the gate so far this year. So might be that shot in the arm he needs.
Exactly right. Well, there's some drivers that are going to be doing double duty this weekend in the Lone Star State. These are going to be some people that you'll want to know about because they're going to be racing the Xfinity as well as the Cup Series. So Kyle Larson is getting behind the wheel of the 17 Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet for his start Xfinity Series start this year, the first this year. He's made three starts at that track in the Cup Series, and his best finish is second in the inaugural 2021 race. Then there's Ty Gibbs. He'll be behind the wheel of the 19 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota this weekend. He's made two starts in the Xfinity Series in 22 and 23. He posted a 15th place and a third place finish, respectively. He also won the pole in his debut at that track. And Ty Gibbs is no slouch when it comes to road course racing in the Xfinity Series. He scored four wins in his career. He won at the Daytona Road Course in 21. That was his debut into the Xfinity Series. What a great way to start. He also won in 2021 at Watkins Glen International, Road America in 2022, and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course in 23. The last driver to keep your eye on doing double duty this weekend is John Hunter Nemechek. He's going to be joining Joe Gibbs Racing in that number 20 Toyota this weekend. He made one start at the Austin track, where he finished 27th just last year. If he pulls off a win this weekend, it will be his first road course win in the series. Here's another driver that I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does on the racetrack, Jay. We saw him do really well up in Chicago.
Well, I wanted to back up to some of these that are doing double duty real quick before I hit this next one. The interesting dynamic of why. Sometimes it's filling for sponsorship of if they bring sponsors. Some of them is for extra seat time. Some of them, if they're good at the style of track, they just want to go out and get a victory where they can. Some of it is they need to work on it. So you see that variety of reasons for these guys doing the double duty. Now, this next one, SVG, there's a lot of reasons he is, but one is just seat time. He is good at the road courses. Shane Van Gisbergen, he's NASCAR's newest star. He rose to fame in the league last season when he won the inaugural Chicago Street Race in the Cup Series in his first start. So not only picking up that historical win, but he was the seventh driver all time in NASCAR Cup Series history to win in his series debut, the first to do it since Johnny Rutherford accomplished that feat in 1963, and that was at Daytona. Now, Van Gisbergen also became the first driver not from the United States to win in his Cup Series debut, as he does come to us from Australia. While he was there, he made a name for himself there, as he was a three-time Supercars, the V8 Supercar Series champion, is now full-time in the Xfinity Series, pulling double duty this weekend at COTA, though, for the first road course in the Cup Series of the 2024 season. It will be his first stint on the road course in the Xfinity Series, but third in the Cup Series. 2023 ran two Cup Series races, the Chicago Street Race we mentioned, where he got the checkered flag, and then the Indianapolis Road Course, where he finished 10th. Again, had a little bit of a tough start to the season. Main goal at this point, just getting accustomed to our stock cars, not the V8 supercars, but it has to be obviously at the top of the list of ones to watch and maybe put a little bit of money on if you're into that for a road course win.
Absolutely. I was thinking about it. You could say that Shane Van Gisbergen made a big splash in Chicagoland last week or last year.
Ooh,
on the street course.
You need to be on Sirius XM when they do Monday headlines today. That was a good one.
Okay. A couple of other things for folks to be aware of. The Dash for Cash is approaching. One of the popular features of the Xfinity Series. It's just around the corner. On March 30th, the qualifying race is going to be at Richmond next weekend. The four highest finishing eligible Xfinity Series drivers will set the field for the Dash for Cash race that takes place on April 6th out at Martinsville. Other Dash for Cash races are going to be April 13th at Texas Motor Speedway and April 20th at Talladega, and it will end on April 27th at Dover Motor Speedway. So this is a real popular event every year in the Xfinity Series where the drivers have a chance to get a $50,000 bonus for winning or $150,000 if they can win all of the Dash for Cash races. So watch for that coming soon to a track near you.
I love this program for so many different reasons. Rewarding the Xfinity Series drivers only, the excitement it brings of that race within a race. We've seen some years where it gets dominated, but a lot of times that rotation is different drivers that are capable or eligible for it. So we see that mix. I really like that whole program, and I know they started doing it in the Truck Series as well under a different name. But Sharon, you could not have set this up any more perfect, I guess, if you'd have tried. I will now cover the Xfinity Series upcoming milestones. We got
it just worked out that way.
Right, yeah. Coincidentally, as we're talking about my birthday or 50th coming up here. So we'll look at Sheldon Creed. He's going to make his 75th career start, and that will be at the Circuit of Americas this weekend. Brandon Jones is 275th. That'll come up at Richmond in a few weeks. And then Cole Custer, he's in between the two. His will be 150th career start. His will come at Martinsville.
Okay, and real quick, we've got a few drivers here. It looks like four drivers have box scores over 100, including A.J. Allmendinger. He's at the top of the list at 147.9 out of 150. That's near perfect. His average finish, by the way, in two races is 1.0. So that's pretty impressive. The next driver is William Byron. I don't think William's driving that car, though, this weekend. It's going to be Kyle Larson driving that number 17 this weekend. But he's got a pretty impressive score as well at 124.9. His average finishing position is 2.0. Sammy Smith comes up next at 112.4 and an average finish at 4.0. So some impressive stats here for these drivers. Sam Mayer, we talked about him. He's got an average finish of 6.0 and an average driver rating at 102.4. Some other drivers that I want to make sure we mention, Sheldon Creed should be mentioned because he's got a, his average finish is at a 9.5. And a lot of people might be tempted to pick Austin Hill this weekend. His average finish at that track is at 19.5. So keep that in mind when you're looking at your picks for this weekend. I would go with those guys that are in those cars that have some really good box scores and average finishes.
You're killing me, Sharon. There's only so far for us for the Xfinity Series. Only Sam Mayer has been taken by Owen. And I got to go last, so quit giving out all these secrets just in case somebody else didn't catch them before I get to pick.
Well, you don't know that we've been doing this for the last several weeks.
I heard you mention it, but yeah, and I know a lot of times we get a lot of information on that, but that one is a new one. It's great to give it to all the fans, give you a little bit idea. Again, the name A.J. Allmendinger, don't need no stats with it. You just know it, but... It's hurt me this week because I know I got to go towards the tail end of this.
Oh, dear. Anyway, we'll move on to the Cup Series. The NASCAR Cup Series Echo Park Automotive Grand Prix will take place at Circuit of the Americas this Sunday, March the 24th. And talking about killing me, we're talking about all these races that are taking place at Circuit of the Americas in Texas this weekend. And guess where I'm going to be?
Yeah, I knew you mentioned that. I think two or three times the other night that you're a little behind this year.
It's killing me because it's not the first time it's happened that I've been in Texas but unable to get to the racetrack. So anyway, here we go again. The race actually starts on Sunday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Fox will carry the coverage. And PRN, SiriusXM, NASCAR Radio will also have coverage. They'll race a distance of 231.88 miles over 68 laps. First two stages are 15 laps each. Stage 1 ends on lap 15, stage 2 on lap 30, and then the final stage will be 38 laps ending on lap 68.
Well, we went through our super speedway stretch, if you will, to start. We've had a couple of short tracks, so let's go road racing. Hopefully not with road rage, though. The Circuit of Americas is the first of five road courses on the schedule. We've had 5-point races on ovals so far, but now the Cup Series returns to one of the country's premier road courses, the Circuit of Americas, known as COTA. That'll be for that Echo Park Automotive Grand Prix coming up on Sunday. The teams are preparing, as I said, the first of five road or street courses on the 2024 schedule. Starting with this one, then we got Sonoma Raceway. It'll be in June. The Chicago Street Race in July. Watkins Glen in September. And then the Charlotte Motor Speedway Roval in October.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be in Chicago for that street race, too, but we've got plans that weekend, and I'm not going to be able to go to that race either.
Another tough weekend, then.
Frustrating. Yeah. Now, construction began on the Circuit of the Americas back in 2010. They took 1,500 acres of land just outside of Austin, Texas. By the way, I have been to that track a couple of times now, once at Christmas time and once at the 4th of July. So I've been to Circuit of the Americas, just not for a race. It's now known as the Circuit of the Americas, of course. It's a 20-turn, 3.41-mile, multi-elevational, counterclockwise circuit that takes advantage of the naturally rolling landscape. And that is so true. It's beautiful out there. It includes the 133-foot hill at turn one. So that's a great way to get started, I guess. And the track also has an amphitheater. It's the largest permanent outdoor amphitheater in Central Texas, and a 251-foot observation tower. It's really stunning. The Sprawling Circuit of the Americas Road Course has hosted three Cup Series races from 21 to 23, and that's given them three different pole winners and three different race winners. So we're going to set the stage for the new road course package, Jay.
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. When we look at when NASCAR shifted from, they had two, sometimes three, going back to, I lost the name of it, road course out in California that they used to start the season at, Riverside. But for many years, there was only two, Watkins Glen and Sonoma. When NASCAR started expanding the road courses and creating their own with the Charlotte Roval and the Indy road course, I know a lot of fans really pushed for Circuit of Americas, and I think they've been rewarded because these races have been phenomenal there, minus the rain, which always throws a damper on things, if you will. But as you mentioned, setting the stage here for the Cup Series is a new road course package. So starting here in 2024, the next-gen cars will run a simplified diffuser at the majority of tracks measuring 1 mile or shorter, as well as road courses. Now, that Los Angeles, the Coliseum, Bristol, and Dover are excluded from this package. This weekend at the Circuit of Americas, it'll be the first event with this new package on a road course. Give some details of the components that were updated. The 2023 short track road course splitter stuffers. There's no engine panel strakes. There is a 3-inch spoiler, the simplified diffuser, as well as the simplified diffuser strakes. And if you want more information on that, get it from somebody other than me, because I don't know what all those parts are. I should have brought Mike in here for this one.
We need our technician here.
Right.
Okay. With the first road course qualifying as a Cup season, it's time for drivers to get their elbows up, because this weekend the Cup Series is taking on that 20-turn road course at Circuit of the Americas. So you can watch on Saturday, March the 24th at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Fox and PRN Sirius XM NASCAR Radio will carry that qualifying. The first three Cup races at COTUS has given us three different pole winners, and will we see a fourth is the big question going into this weekend. Tyler Reddick, Ryan Blaney, and William Byron are the three different pole winners that we've seen from 21, 22, and 23. Interestingly, three different starting positions have led to victories in the Cup Series at that track, but none from the pole or the first starting spot. The 21 race was won from the eighth starting spot, the 22 from the 16th, and last year's race was won from the outside of the front row or the second starting spot. So we'll see if that trend continues this weekend. The on-track activity will begin for the NASCAR Cup Series with practice on Saturday at 9 a.m., followed by the Busch Light qualifying at 10:30 a.m., and both events will be televised on Fox Sports 2. So that's a little bit different on Fox Sports 2 for practice and qualifying. And then PRN and Sirius XM NASCAR Radio will have the radio coverage.
Well, a couple of comments there. I had to look up and double check just to make sure. I heard you stress too, and I was going to say something, but I looked up there and I was like, yeah, that is a change. So glad you highlighted that as far as that being on FS2 for that. But from the looking at the three different pole winners and the race winners so far, the parity, and I know we've talked about some favorites,
yeah,
and those three are definitely drivers you want to have on your list, depending on how far down you got to make your pick if you're picking a driver. But you got to add SVG, as well as, and again, this ties into this next one, parity. As Hamlin becomes the fifth different winner in the first five races, which keeps the season streak alive. It's arguably one of the greatest short track races ever, last Sunday at Bristol Motor Speedway. It was Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin that banked his first win of the 2024 season, becoming that fifth different winner in the first five races of the year. He joins William Byron from Daytona, Daniel Suarez at a best Atlanta race ever, if you want to argue that one.
Yes, indeed. Best race ever, yeah. Probably.
That one's not even an argument. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Larson at Las Vegas. Christopher Bell getting his out at Phoenix. So now as we head to the Cup Series, heads to Austin, Texas for the COTA Showdown. We've produced three different winners there in the last three seasons, and all the ingredients are lining up for it could be a streak of different winners this season and see a sixth. When we look at the modern era, which ranges from 1972 through the present, 2024, we have a record of different winners to start a NASCAR Cup season at 10, which was set back in the year 2000. That year, NASCAR Hall of Famer Dale Earnhardt Jr. snapped the different winners streak by winning his second race of the 2000 season. That came at Richmond, which was race number 11. Now, none of the former COTA winners have won yet this season, so they're looking to get back to victory lane. We'll start with Hendrick Motorsports' Chase Elliott, won the inaugural Cup Series event at COTA in 2021 after starting from the eighth position. Now, Elliott leads all active drivers in the road course wins with seven. If he were to win this weekend, he would tie NASCAR Hall of Famer Tony Stewart at eight road course wins for second most all-time on the Cup Series road course wins list. And I want to throw in my own note here that has not been yet in the next-gen car. That's an interesting fact to keep in mind. It has not been in this new car. Trackhouse Racing's Ross Chastain, talked about him being in the Truck Series. He won the NASCAR Cup Series Circuit of America's race in 2022, started from the 16th position. That victory was extra special because it was the first career Cup Series win for driver Ross Chastain, and he's only the only driver to finish in the top five in all three previous COTA races. Now, that's a good note to have in your pocket. Then next, last season it was 2311's Racing's Tyler Reddick won the road course at COTA in 2023 after starting from the second position. Now, interestingly, Reddick has won five career Cup Series races. Three have come on road courses, Road America in 2022 and the Indianapolis Road Course in 2022. Yeah, also in 2022.
I'm sorry.
Well,
I jumped the gun there.
Oh, okay. Road America and Indianapolis Road Course were both in 2022 and then COTA in 2023. So that gives his credentials as far as a road course winner. And you could go back and look at his Xfinity Series history as well. He is a road course. I don't know if you can call him a ringer, but he can hold his own.
He holds his own. There's no doubt about it. All right. Talking about that next gen car. They are smashing records this year. Everybody said there was work to be done on the next-gen car, and NASCAR did their due diligence, and we are seeing the results. It's been a strong start to the season statistically as the next-gen car continues to put the Cup Series at the top of the list in terms of the closest and most competitive racing on the planet. Below are just a few of the highlights of the first five races of this season and what they have delivered. Let's take a look at that. The record average lap leaders. This season, the Cup Series has given us an average of 14.2 lap leaders per race in those first five races. That's the series most average number of lap leaders through the first five races of a season in the modern era. So that is a smash of a record. Also, record average lead changes. Cup Series averages 35.4 lead changes per race, and the series most in the modern era. The next highest was back in 2011 when the season gave us 31.6. So that's another one that kind of smashed that record that was set in 2011. From 31.6 to 35.4. The record green flag passes for the lead. The Cup Series has given us 487 green flag passes for the lead in just five races. That's amazing. That's the most since the inception of that stat that started back in 2005. It surpasses the previous record of 348 by quite a lot, green flag passes for the lead through the first five races. And that was set in 22 and 23 tied. They tied at that 348 stat. The record total for green flag passes, the 24 Cup season, has given us 29,429 total green flag passes. That's the series most through five races of the season since the inception of the stat, once again surpassing that previous record that was set at 27,341 green flag passes through the first five races. So pretty close to 2,000 difference there. Five different winners in the first five races. It's the 17th time in the modern era that that's happened, and NASCAR's opened the season this year with those five different winners in the first five races. So really cool to see that happening. I always like to see how long can we go with different winners for the season, because I'm waiting for us to surpass the number of 16 for those who qualify. I think this could be the year that it happens, Jay, that we surpass that number of 16 and have people who won a race but don't qualify to be in the playoffs. What do you think?
Well, I know we've approached it, and when we start the season like this, there's always that hope, but there's several factors, actually. Talk about the car. NASCAR's been tweaking on that and making improvements and adjusting things. We have more teams that just as an organization and a team have been competitive, whether they weren't before or they were and dropped off a little bit. When you talk about RFK Racing back to running up front where we know they should be and deserve to be, as well as then just the drivers of some drivers that are getting comfortable or just getting into their groove. So I'm with you. Every year I always think that, but as you get your drivers like Kyle Larson, William Byron, Byron leading the series with six victories last year, ones like that one, and I don't want to take anything away from him because he did a great job, but that's what kind of brings that down, and my hope goes back down. We know there are top drivers who could rip off several in a row, actually, so we'll have to see.
But you know what? I think it is an indicator of how deep the field is or isn't. So it's fun to watch that stat.
It certainly is, and I'm with you. I'd kind of like to see it happen, but it's tough, and I know that there's a good and a bad. I want to see it, but we know that there are some top drivers out there that are fan favorites and we like to see, so it's kind of a win-lose-win. I don't know how to word that.
Okay.
Now, we looked there. We talked about some of these guys that are, we were calling them ringers. NASCAR refers to it as a bevy of road course aces. Takoda, at one time in the NASCAR Cup Series, being a road course specialist was an anomaly, but not anymore. As we head into this weekend there for Takoda, NASCAR Cup Series has 15 former road course winners entered into the Echo Park Automotive Grand Prix. And 10 of them, as mentioned, are looking for their first win of the 2024 season. The Cup Series season. The only ones not scratched off that list now are William Byron, Daniel Suarez, Kyle Larson, Christopher Bell, and Denny Hamlin. So when we look at active road course winners, Chase Elliott has a total of seven. And that tracks we look at Watkins Glen, Sonoma, Charlotte, which would be the Roval, Coda, Indy, Daytona, Road America, and the Chicago Street Race, which only has one now. But Chase Elliott has a total of seven, got a pair at Watkins Glen, a pair at Charlotte, and then one at Daytona and Road America. Martin Truex, of his five, four have come at Sonoma, one at Watkins Glen. Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, both have four, and Busch has split two and two, Watkins Glen and Sonoma. Keeping in mind, those are the two that have been on the series schedule here for many, many years. Kyle Larson is one and, or I'm sorry, has four, two at Watkins Glen, one at Sonoma. He does have one at Charlotte. AJ Allmendinger, Tyler Reddick are next at three. Allmendingers are spread out. Watkins Glen. Okay, I can't keep that together with that page. Charlotte and those aren't lining
I can
up.
Give
sorry.
It. It's
yeah, okay.
Charlotte, then it goes to Indy, and that's the only other one.
All right, Tyler Reddick has three, and his is Coda, Indy, and Road America. Christopher Bell, let me get into the ones that have two. Christopher Bell, his is Charlotte, and it looks like Daytona. Yeah.
That's right, Daytona's
okay.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry, mine, this chart is not keeping it lined up. So from here, I'm going to go, that was Christopher Bell. If one victory, it's Daniel Suarez, Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano, Ryan Blaney, Ross Chastain, William Byron, Michael McDowell, Shane Van Gisbergen. I know SVGs came at, obviously, the Charlotte Road or the Chicago Street Race. Michael McDowell picked his up at the Indianapolis Road Course. Mentioned Ross Chastain. His came here at COTA. Who did I miss? Denny Hamlin and Joey Logano's were both at Watkins Glen. Daniel Suarez was out at Sonoma. And then William Byron was at Watkins Glen. Okay, there, I think I covered them all.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, we got a little bit more.
Sonoma winner was...
Yeah, sorry, we got
I'm
a little
sorry.
Bit more under that. I didn't see under the chart there. Last season, Sonoma winner, Martin Truex, with his five over his career, his second most, as I read them off. He finished runner-up at Bristol, so he's looking for that first win. It's a big highlight for him.
It is. Okay, let's go take a trip down memory lane and look at the first three cup races at COTA. As we've been mentioning, the first race at Circuit of the Americas was in 2021. That was on May 23rd. It was shortened from its scheduled 68 laps to 54 because of rain, and I think I was there that weekend too. The rain gave the race actually produced 11 lead changes among 10 different leaders, and it was Hendrick Motorsports and the 2020 champion Chase Elliott who won that inaugural race under caution. Then the series went back to the track in 22, and this time they went into overtime, 69 laps total, producing 13 lead changes among 9 different leaders. The final lead change, of that race that took place in March of 22, with just 2 laps to go, when Trackhouse Racing's Ross Chastain passed Tyler Reddick for the lead, and then went on to win his very first career Cup Series race. The 22 race was also the premiere of that next-gen car, as Jay pointed out earlier, especially on the road course, and it didn't disappoint because it gave a NASCAR Cup Series record for green flag passes for the lead on a road course with 30 green flag passes. Last season was another hard-fought race out at Circuit of the Americas for the second consecutive year. It went into overtime, producing 16 lead changes among 7 different drivers, and the final lead change of that race that was in March 26th last year took place with 12 laps to go. This time it was Tyler Reddick passing William Byron for the lead and ultimately the win. It was another very, very much so action-filled road course race with 21 green flag passes for the lead. So I think that trip down memory lane tells us that there's a promising future for us at Circuit of the Americas this weekend.
Most certainly, and we got that added twist of the new package, so we'll see who adapts to that. Really excited about the unknown of what could come here at COTA. Almost said COTA with a K, and that's because Kobayashi was on my mind as he joins the Cup Series at COTA for Team 2311 Racing. They're going to field the third car this weekend, so in the number 50 Toyota will be former Formula One driver Kamui Kobayashi. He'll be making his first career start of the season and the second of his career. Obviously, he's looking forward to it, as Kobashi made his Cup Series debut at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course last season with 23-11. He is from Amagasaki, Japan. Started 28th and unfortunately finished 33rd in that event. But don't let that one stat line throw you off there. He's going to be one, I think, to contend with.
Okay. I'm going to just kind of highlight these next topics here because I want to make sure we give you the fantasy preview as well. Giancarlo Esposito and Ski Altridge land dignitary roles at COTA. At COTA. Giancarlo Esposito and Ski Altridge, who are stars of the AMC and AMC Plus Series Parish, will share leading roles this weekend. They're expected to be, it's a high-octane drama that will premiere on March the 31st. But they are both going to serve prominent dignitary roles this weekend at the Cup Series race. Esposito will be the grand marshal that will call for drivers to start their engines. And let's see. I'm trying to see what the other guy is going to be doing. Ulrich will then take the reins from Esposito as the honorary pace car driver. So he'll be behind the wheel of Toyota Camry's pace car for the 40-car field to lead them to the green flag. Also, we've got the multi-platinum recording artist Riley Green is going to perform the pre-race concert at COTA this weekend. That'll be on Sunday, March the 24th. So fans will have that to look forward to. And there's a couple of milestones. I'm not going to cover all of them. I'm just going to cover the ones that are going to be at Circuit of the America this weekend. Bubba Wallace is making his 225th Cup Series start. Christopher Bell, his 150th Cup Series start this weekend. And then if Martin Truex wins the race, a race this season, he will tie Brad Keselowski for the 24th all-time on the Cup Series list with 35 wins. So keep an eye out for that. If Kyle Larson wins, he'll reach 25 career wins, becoming the 36th driver all-time in the Cup Series to reach 25 or more. And if the Woods Brothers organizations can hit that 100th Cup Series victory, if they come up with a win, right now they're at 99 and just looking for that 100th win. But let me go to the Fantasy Central here and give you the information for the Cup Series. The box scores, there's quite a few drivers. I'm going to start at the bottom here. Let me see if I can make this a little bit bigger so I can see it. William Byron. Yeah, William Byron and Austin Cindric are pretty much tied. Byron has 106.1 to Cindric's 106.8, so he's got a little bit of an edge on that end. But on the side of average finish, Byron is at 8.5, Cindric's at 7.0, so he's got an edge there too. I will say, even though Chase Elliott is below the 100 mark for box score, he does have an average finish at COTA at 4.0, so keep that in mind. The next driver up is Alex Bowman. He's got a 2.5 average finish, and that's tied with Ross Chastain for two races at that track. Chastain has the edge with the box score at 124.4. Alex Bowman's box score is 110.3. At the top of the list is Tyler Reddick with an average finish at 3.0, and his driver box score is 128.7. A couple of other drivers I'm going to call, or just one driver, I guess, I'm going to call out is Ty Gibbs. The rookie in the field this weekend has an average finish at that track of 9.0, so I would not count that Ty Gibbs out. Even though his box score is a little bit lower than everybody else's, he's got a great average finish at 9.0 at that track. So that gives you a little more information for your fantasy picks this weekend. But, Jay, we're at the top of the hour, and that means it's time for Hot Topics. I don't think we have very many Hot Topics to discuss, but we have a few.
Well, and one of them, I don't think I deleted it. Andy pointed out I got snookered of a false report one that I'd seen some other things that I didn't buy into, but that one, I guess, was close enough to being legit looking anyway.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the one on Dale Jr. is invalid, if you will, so take that one off the list.
Okay. Doggone it. It happens. We do get snookered every once in a while. We think we've got a good hot topic. Well, I will say we've got one big hot topic. I think you and I are pretty much in agreement on this one, but let's see. Is there other ones? Oh, there's more. What do you want to start
with? There were a couple. Yeah, well, we'll start with it. I know we didn't get to it on Monday, and I kind of referenced it here. The Bristol race, was it a great, the best ever short track race, or was it a fiasco because of the tire issue? And I just want to start with, if nobody is saying there was not a tire issue. However, how bad was it? It was manageable. This is my perspective to it. Yes, the tires were falling off more than expected. The track was not rubbering in. We were losing, and I say losing tire grip, 40 laps into a run, which you don't want to see that because that's not a very long green flag run when it comes to Bristol. So obviously you do not want to see that. One thing I will say, a lot of people want to go back and compare it to the Indianapolis race in 2008. Those tires were blowing out and there was nothing that could be done. They couldn't manage it in any way, shape, or form. So that's why I do not compare it and call it a disaster or a fiasco when it comes to that. Look at this past weekend at Bristol. Yes, the tires were falling off quicker than expected, but drivers could adjust their line, adjust their throttle usage, adjust how hard they went into the corners, start braking a little bit earlier. And you saw them falling back, but they also had the option to pit. Those tires did not blow out on them with no warning or expectation. The drivers were choosing to run them until they absolutely had to. And I say wearing them out where they just ran out of rubber, I think, is what I heard on Sirius XM. So that put it in the driver's hands. And I know initially following the race, there were some drivers that did not have good runs. Things didn't go their way. They get the finish they thought they should have had. Maybe a little upset and said some things of, yeah, this was really bad, worst ever. But throughout the week, they said, you know, really, it was manageable. It put on a good show for the race. We can make some adjustments. And that includes NASCAR and Goodyear working together to try and figure out why it was that bad. I think they have pinpointed it pretty much to the temperature being a little bit lower than expected, so thus the track didn't rubber up like it should have, and tire wear should have gotten better from the first run to the fourth, fifth run throughout the race. And it just never did. So I do not think it was a bad thing. It was not ideal. Don't get me wrong. It was not ideal, and I did think it was a good, rank it up their greatest, make your case however you want. It was a good race. We had a lot of excitement, some different things happening. You look at it, though, the veterans that knew how to react prevailed, and I say that saying Ty Gibbs, you just talked about him a little bit, probably had the fastest car. I think it was Dave Moody that said it, though, as is usually the case. It's not always the guy with the fastest car. It's the one who drives the car the smartest, which that leads us to Denny Hamlin. And in this case, he did.
Yes, indeed. I'm kind of glad we're getting this one talked about and kind of out of the way. Everybody is entitled to their opinion, but I think perspective makes all the difference in the world in this case. And I think the perspective really made the difference for a lot of people. It's just like a lot of races. If you didn't have the finish that you were hoping to have, and if your car wasn't set up for those adjustments that had to be made, you're not going to like this race. You're going to feel real crappy about this race. And I know it was mentioned that some of the drivers walked away and didn't even want to talk to media afterward. And that's understandable. Things didn't go their way, and they had a really difficult time of it. But I think the real question is, what happened there? Why weren't they able to make those adjustments? And I think those are some serious questions that they need to ask of their organization about why they couldn't make those adjustments during the race, because there clearly were other teams that were able to make adjustments, drivers who made adjustments, and overall the teams that made adjustments. And I thought the communication was really good, too. They were communicating with drivers and telling them, this is what's happening to your tires. And I heard drivers say, with that information, they knew what they had to do behind the wheel to make the adjustments to reduce that kind of wear on their tire. You mentioned the race at Indianapolis. I was at that race. This was nowhere near the same as what happened at Indianapolis. Every 10 laps, they were stopping, and that was a two-mile track. So think about that. That was a two-mile track, and they were stopping every 10 laps to change the tires because those tires were indeed blowing out. The other thing that I think a lot of people don't take into consideration, and I heard it from a lot of people this week, is that we looked back on the race and kind of pondered this question. No one was expecting what happened at Bristol. Goodyear didn't anticipate it. NASCAR didn't anticipate it. The teams, the drivers, no one anticipated what happened at Bristol. That Goodyear told us that NASCAR and the drivers asked for them to bring a softer tire to the track. They gave the drivers and the teams exactly what they asked for. This was not Goodyear making a decision about that tire and making a big mistake. And there were crew chiefs that stepped up this week and let everybody know this was not Goodyear's fault. They actually gave everybody exactly what they asked for. The other thing that kind of came up was practice. I think even in practice, they recognized that there was tire fall off, and they recognized that the tires were going to fall off maybe a little bit more than they anticipated. But with the cloud cover that they had at the track on Sunday, I think it was sunny on Saturday when they practiced, but it was cloudy on Sunday when they actually ran the race. So that changed the track temperature and everything else. Now, there are a lot of variables that NASCAR is going to look at and try to decide what was the actual thing that made the difference, because the resin was another reason, another thing that happened differently at the track. Because NASCAR actually brought the same tire that they ran at Bristol in September, and they tested it before that September race. So it worked well at that September race, but they also had PJ1 on the track instead of the resin on the track. So they felt that maybe that was part of what made the difference in this race. And I agree with you, Jay. Nobody is disputing the fact that the tire fall off happened, and that nobody expected that tire fall off. I think that is obvious that that's exactly what happened. But what I am so proud of all of these teams, of all of these drivers, crew chiefs, everybody involved with the sport, NASCAR and Goodyear included, they rose to the occasion and did what they did. Even though practice told them there was going to be greater fall off, nobody knew it was going to be to the degree that it was. Nobody. But they responded to that very quickly, giving the teams the extra tires that they needed, At one point, I saw somebody make a comment that they were going to need 1,000 extra tires in order to make this work, and that's nowhere close to what they actually needed. So NASCAR Goodyear gave every team, and NASCAR approved of it, 4 additional tires. Teams started using scuffs. They started, giving driver feedback and everything else about what was going to happen here and what was happening with their tires as it was happening. Everybody rose to the occasion. And if you watch the race, it was a really good race. And I saw a lot of drivers, even some of the frustrated ones that got out of their cars and said it wasn't what they were expecting. It was one of the hardest races they ever had to race, but it was fun. They had fun behind the wheel because they were in control of what happened behind the wheel of that car. And there was a tremendous team effort taking place throughout this race in order to make it as exciting as it was. The veteran, Denny Hamlin, and really good on short tracks, was the one who knew what he had to do in order to make this work. He said it. As soon as they realized what kind of tire fall off there was, he did what he knew he needed to do in order to save his car to be there at the end. You know, a lot of people think that you got to go fast. You said the fastest car doesn't always win. Sometimes slowing down a little bit gives us a better product than trying to make it go faster. And even Denny Hamlin, who was advocating for higher horsepower, somebody asked him in the post-race interview how he felt about higher horsepower. He said, we don't need it. If we have this kind of tire and they improve upon it just a little bit, we're talking tweaking, not a huge swing. We're talking about tweaking that change. Then he thinks this is the answer for the short track package. So I'm super excited about that. I know even at Phoenix, when they use the short track package, and I pointed this out to a lot of people, when they use that short track package, they asked Adam Stevens, who was the winning crew chief, they said, how much did you feel like you could make moves and move around the traffic? This was at Phoenix now. Last fall, you got stuck behind the 17. Today, you were able to make moves. And I found Adam Stevens' comments to be quite revealing. And I wish more people would have paid attention to what Adam Stevens was saying. I've got a feeling some of the teams did pay attention, but a lot of the fans, I don't think, did. So one data point is what Adam Stevens said. That's the one we have. We'll talk about it for sure, but we had a good car. When we were tight at the start, we weren't going forward. We barely held our ground, and when we got the balance close, we were able to make moves to get up there. I think if anything, you would say that there was an improvement there. You have to ask some of the other competitors really to get a better feel for that. But I thought when we had a run, we could get closer than we could, and we could make a move. Now, he's the crew chief for Chris Bell who won that race. But Adam Stevens went on to say, the other thing I liked was the tire and the track conditions and the reduced force. Let me say that again. He liked the tire, the track conditions, and the reduced downforce. Overall, kind of widen the racetrack out a little bit. You could run too wide on both ends of the racetrack. You could pass high if you had to. You could pass low if you needed to. It was just overall racier, I would say. Now, keep in mind, this is the race winner, but there's a reason why he won. He won because of all the things that we're talking about here, and that was at Phoenix with the new short track package. Now, take that information, go to Bristol the next week, and they didn't have the new package on that car, but I think there was a lot in his comments that indicated that this car has what they can use on a short track package. So the tire, and then when they asked Denny Hamlin if he thought that they needed to increase the horsepower, he said no. The tire change made all the difference in the world. So I think they've hit on it, and I'm super excited to watch our continued short track races this season. I know that was a little bit lengthy, but I had a lot to say there, Jay.
Well, and there's still more to say as far as that. Could have this discussion.
Is.
I'm sure on SiriusXM it's been all week. One of the things I look at, you hitting off a couple of points you made, drivers have been asking for a softer or tire wear fall off, as well as putting it back in their hands. And multiple drivers throughout the field, whether they had a good finish or bad finish, agreed with that and were happy with that. You mentioned drivers that were able to handle it as a whole over Phoenix and as well as here at Bristol. Organization-wise, Toyota seemed to be on top of their game.
Yeah.
The Fords was kind of hit or miss, but there were several Fords, RFK, Roush Fenway Kozlowski. You had both Brad Kozlowski, I believe, was top five, Chris Buescher within the top 10. Josh Berry, and I'll come back to him in a minute, had one of the top five cars, had to pit late. He was wearing his out earliest, but then came back to finish just outside the top 10. One thing to look at was your drivers that came from the short track super late models.
Yeah.
And that includes Denny Hamlin, Josh Berry, John Hunter Nemechek, and who was the other one I wanted to mention there? Justin Haley, who with RWR. Now, again, I got another point to make with that team, but those drivers understand the tire management aspect of it. The other thing is you were talking about different things that caused this or might have contributed to it. Think back in the day, and I'm going to go back a little old school because one of them I don't know that is possible anymore, but driver says their car is tight, I need it to be loosened up. They come into pit. You make a wedge adjustment. You make a tire pressure adjustment. And back in the day, you could take in or put in or take out a spring rubber. So you've made three changes. Now the driver goes back out and says, hey, this is way too loose. A, you went too far with a correction, or the combination of the three. And I think that's what we got there at Bristol. They had a different tire for a spring race. It did go real well in the fall. This was the spring race, which Bristol hadn't had a concrete race in the spring for 3 years as they've been doing it on dirt. The temperature was chillier. You mentioned the cloud cover on Sunday versus practice earlier in the weekend. So the temperature was, and I think that's why I say where they're pointing out the bigger thing. The PJ1 versus resin, that didn't spread out like they thought it would. Or I don't know that that one would necessarily affect the rest of the track not rubbering up. But again, there were multiple things going on there. So to point the finger at Goodyear, like you said, of, well, they made a mistake. No, they may have gone a little too far with that. And I think that's what a lot of them are saying now of, we want the tire wear and fall off. Maybe not quite that much. Let's see if we can bring it back just a little bit, because that is what they wanted. Just maybe a little bit of an over adjustment. But now we got to wait and see, because as you said, it didn't do that in September. The package, the tire compound and everything looked good in September in the test as well as the race in the fall. This was a spring race. Obviously the temperature, NASCAR, nobody can do anything about that as far as the weather and temperature. The difference between the PJ1 and the resin, that was because this is now under the wet weather package in preparation as well, that they think they can at least do some semblance of racing if they need to go to a wet weather package. The PJ1 did not mix with that. It was mixing oil and water, literally, they said, is that's what that was causing. They figured the resin would not be affected by wet weather, so they could run the wet weather package. So that's why they switched to that. There's so many levels to it, and you can't just point the finger and point out one thing. The other I wanted to talk about real quick, go back to Rick Ware Racing and Justin Haley. That is not a team that has all the resources of Joe Gibbs Racing, Hendrick Motorsports, your top-tier teams. Whether by choice or lack of knowledge, they don't push their setups as far into the extreme that some of these top teams do. Yes, they want to improve and get speed, and like I said, it could be a lack of knowledge of it, or if they go over that line and get a penalty and a fine, they can't afford to pay it. So they choose to stay on the safe side by a good margin so they don't go off. It means that if you got too much camber in your car and your tires are wearing faster than anybody else's, now you got other reasons that are, they didn't have that problem because their camber, and I'm just using that as one example, wasn't pushed as far to the limit. So that played into their favor in this case. And I think about dirt track racing, talking about horsepower. If you have a crate engine versus a open motor, the open motor, you got more horsepower. Depending on how the track rubbers up in the conditions of the track, occasionally drag race straight up, you're going to lose to the open motor. But if the track rubbers up and you can't use all that horsepower, now the crate motor that, as you said, Sharon, isn't as fast outright, you actually got the advantage there because the other one can't use that horsepower anyway. So there's a lot of different things. And overall, yeah, I thought it was a good race. Can improvements be made? Yes. Yeah. Precautions taken? Yes. Will that make it even better then? I believe yes. So we went in a good direction. Maybe need to back it up a little or figure out what the combination was that made it go awry. But it was good, and we can learn from it. And again, I don't think it was a disaster. None of the cars, when we talk about a tire blowing out, the car just snaps and you end up in the wall. Nobody ended up in the wall. There were some tires down and then shredded and they had to run on the rim and maybe damage their car? Yes. Could you have pitted a lap or two earlier? Yes. So it's in the drivers, the team's hands. And Toyota as a whole, Martin Truex, Denny Hamlin, obviously handled it very well. Ty Gibbs in a Joe Gibbs machine, again, probably had the fastest, best-handling car as long as he had the tires, made a decision to get out front and run. In the end, he ended up in the back. So lesson learned for the rookie, or second year. He was a rookie last year.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that you said. I'm just going to add a couple of things here. I know it has been said that NASCAR's lucky that a car didn't blow a tire and end up in the wall and, cause a serious accident and perhaps hurt somebody. I think it didn't happen. I think we didn't see anybody do that because they knew what they were dealing with and they adjusted accordingly. So these drivers know what the situation was and they knew how to handle it. The crew chiefs knew what the situation was and they knew how to handle it. The tire specialist knew what the situation was and they knew how to handle it. One of the things that we always talk about on this show too is the PSI on the tires. Sometimes teams will adjust the PSI to get better grip on the road. And when they do that, they're taking a chance because it makes them more likely to blow a tire if they don't get it just right. I'm like you when you gave the example of those people that were setting up their car within the parameters of camber that is recommended, they tended to do better because they were in the recommended level. I think the reason we saw so many people blow tires in the beginning is because maybe they didn't have the recommended PSI on those tires, and that's why there were so many flat tires. NASCAR had nothing to do with that. Goodyear had nothing to do with that. That was teams making a conscious decision to play with the PSI on those tires. And as soon as they realized that that was not going to be a strategy that was going to help them, they adjusted accordingly. So I think that everybody did what they were supposed to do in this particular situation. And I think that they did it very effectively. I think that the drivers and most everybody I talked to, if there are exceptions, thought that everything went really, really well, and that the race ended up being a really good race. I know when they talked about Goodyear making a mistake and everything, I thought, I don't think so. And I was glad when they came out and said that they didn't make a mistake. They gave NASCAR and teams exactly what they asked for. And they admitted, Goodyear admitted, they said, maybe we took it a little bit too far and we're seeing the result of that. We'll have to look at the data and make adjustments accordingly. And I'm sure that they are going to do that. I think that they hit on something, and maybe they accidentally hit on something. I don't know. But I think they hit on something that's really going to make the racing better on short tracks. And I think that that's a very big positive for everybody involved. The drivers enjoyed it. All the teams enjoyed it. I'm not going to say all the teams because I know there were a few drivers that were frustrated with their race and they walked off and they didn't talk to the media because of their frustrations. But that frustration may or may not have had anything to do with the tire. Frustration may have been that their team couldn't make the adjustments that they needed in order to be racier on the track. Maybe their frustration had to do with, you know, something totally non-race related. I don't know, but I think we're making a lot of assumptions when it comes to why those drivers walked off. Was it frustration? I'm guessing it was frustration. And they didn't feel like talking to anybody. They were out of sorts, and they didn't want to talk to anybody, so they left the track and walked away. But we'll see what they do as they continue to work on the tire and how these other drivers make the adjustments. This race actually reminded a lot of people, and you brought it up a little bit there, Jay, when you said that the drivers who were short track racers and race late models, they knew exactly what they had to do when everything started going down, and they did it. The drivers that probably struggled with that are probably the drivers that might not have as much experience with that, or teams that don't have as much experience with that. The driver might have the experience, but if the team doesn't have it, they're not going to do the right adjustments. So, and they liked it. They thought this was a kind of a throwback to earlier years in NASCAR, and when everything was in the driver's hands and the teams and the strategy had to play out with how the team handled the tire management and handled the adjustments to the car. I think that's a good thing. That's what a lot of fans have been asking for, and that is exactly what they got at Bristol Motor Speedway, and exactly why so many of the drivers did enjoy it. Just be careful about a rush to judgment. I think this is a perfect example of rushing to a judgment about something without looking at the bigger picture and the overall picture of what's happening. Where some people looked at it and saw a negative, I looked at it and I saw so many positives that people were literally ignoring. And I don't know if they were ignoring it. I'm going to rephrase that because I don't think they were ignoring it, but I don't think they enjoyed. I don't think they got the pleasure out of all of the positives that were happening at that track because they were so focused on the negative thing that happened. And there was so much to appreciate and enjoy in that race that got lost. For those that focus just on that negative, and the negative wasn't nearly as negative as they thought it was.
Well, Sharon, I don't know if you've been hanging out or have my house bugged here, but been a lot of talk this week amongst just people. excuse me, and then you give me your tickle in the throat as well.
Holy cow.
That. just people in general, and this ranges from work, coworkers, family members, and all, ones that want to look for negative things or ones that want to look for positive. And that doesn't mean that the other isn't there. It's what you focus on.
I totally agree. It's what you focus on. And it's if you're looking at the bigger picture, I think, as well. You know, what makes me sad about it is it seems to me that it takes away from a more pleasurable experience in life. I've encountered some people in my path, in my journey of life, and there are some people that are so bitter that it's very hard for them to enjoy life. And all they see are negatives. And it makes me very sad when I see that, because I want to surround myself with those people who can see the positives, not ignore the negative, but see the positives and look at that negative and say, how can I make this work? And that's I think, the way we should look at life, is when something happens, not focus so much on that negative that you can't see the solutions. And there were a lot of solutions that people came up with in this race. I'm kind of experiencing that right now with more than one person who is so bitter that they just can't move on. And I think that's the other thing that happens. People have a hard time moving on when they get stuck with the negatives or when they get stuck in that negative mind frame. And it's better if you're able to move on from those negatives and enjoy what is out there. And sometimes I think the blind wall of getting stuck on that negative causes people to miss out on the more pleasurable parts of the life, the race, the experience, or whatever it is. And it does make me sad. And that's why I try so hard to help people see sometimes. So, Jay, you have anything you want to add there? I think we're coming close to the end of that.
Yeah, I was just saying, yeah, pretty much as far as the race, but kind of moved into a life cycle there of if this is fan for racing therapy session now, and I say that as Jeff's back here and listening, well, that's another thing we've talked about. Just again, the in general attitude in life, not just about racing or not just about this. So I thought that was kind of funny as well. But one thing, we'll find some positives here if you want to go to the next hot topic.
Okay, that sounds good to me. I'm ready.
The road racing aces, we said, you know, there may not be those anymore, but we have two I think we need to look at, and that is Shane Van Gisbergen, as well as, and I have to pull it up now, I can't say it without looking at it, Kamui Kobayashi. There we go. Whew. Guess I can. But those are two that are on the list of ringers for COTA, if you will.
Okay, I'm looking for that on the – is that on the teams page? Oh, I know why I can't find it.
Yeah, under the Dale Earnhardt Jr. one that needs – I'll delete that actually right now. I think I can. Yep, there we go.
Okay, here it is. Okay, is it the one that says Almendinger, Van Gisbergen, and Kobayashi, ringers at COTA? Not all teams have filed rosters yet?
Yeah, and actually I did. I apologize. I left Almendinger off there because I forgot he is not full-time on the Cup Series, but he will be making one of his Cup Series starts with the Colic Racing on the Cup side now this year. So, yeah, his name obviously maybe even the top of the list.
Okay. Yeah, it says not all teams have filed rosters yet for next week's race at COTA, but Colic Racing has a third card, and the number 13 entered for A.J. Almendinger. Shane Van Gisbergen will be in the 16. Almendinger, Kobayashi, 2311's number 50 and Timmy Hill MBM's number 66 are open cars filed or announced. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what these guys do. Almendinger, as we kind of discussed in the previous show, has amazing stats for what he's done in the Xfinity Series. Out of 150 box score potential, I think his is at like 147 point something. And it's just amazing what he's able to do on the road courses. Ben Gisbergen, we know he's good on the road courses. He won his very first race with the debut at the Chicago Street Race last year. This will be the first road course race that we've had for him to race in for this race at COTA. So I'm really anxious to see what he does. And I'm always happy to see the crossover. Van Gisbergen and Kobayashi are good examples of crossing over from the V8 cars that Van Gisbergen races out in Australia. And Kobayashi's coming from the F1 racing arena and racing here in the COTA race this weekend. One thing that I found interesting, and we've watched this happen over the course of a few years, and we mentioned it earlier on the show as well, that it used to be that they'd bring in road course ringers to win these races, but these drivers have become so good on the road courses now that sometimes it's hard. Almendinger is a good example. Sometimes it's hard for a road course ringer to come in and win against NASCAR in a stock car because these guys have figured it out, and they're really good on the road courses in a stock car. There's a lot of difference between driving a V8 on a road course and driving an F1 car on a road course versus a stock car. So there are adjustments that have to be made, and Van Gisbergen figured it out really quick on the street road course at Chicago. We'll see if he's able to do that on an actual road course race here at Circuit of the Americas, one of the premier road course tracks in the country. And Kobayashi, really good on road courses, but there's a big difference between an F1 open wheel car and the stock cars that we're racing this weekend. So it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to see what these guys do, and I'm looking forward to it.
I am as well, and this is one of those, you said, the crossover as far as brands or styles of racing. But generally, when you're talking about that, it also then, and I say generally, there are some others that are American, but we tend to then also see a country crossover. I mean, talk about Boris said, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, who's another Canadian
Marcus
one.
Ambrose.
We've had a couple of Marcus Ambrose came from Australia, like Van Gisbergen has. Ron Fellows, I think, was a Canadian. There's another one. If it comes to me, I'll bring it back up. But we've seen a couple of Japanese. Who did you say there?
Villeneuve.
Jacques Villeneuve, yep,
driver.
There we go. Like I said, so when we see that, I know Daniel Suarez coming from road racing in Mexico. We've seen a couple of Mexican stars, Juan Pablo Montoya from Bogota, Colombia. That's where I think you get the international flavor and crossover as well, is on these more so road courses. So I think that adds to it. But especially if the equipment, and I don't want to rag on any team, some of them that these drivers have gotten into aren't of the top tier teams. We're starting to see more of them. And these teams that aren't are closer. When we talk about the parity, they are at least closer, so they are more competitive. Do I think they're going to go out and get the pole and race? Maybe not. But they are more competitive. And I think of Jordan Taylor when he came in, was in the top team. That was just the pure adjustment to stock car and running with the NASCAR Cup Series. Then they believe he was in for the number nine of Chase Elliott, if I'm not mistaken, was his opportunity. There again, you can't just put, you know, they always say you can put anybody in a Hendrick car, they're going to win. No, that's not the case. You still got to have that talent. And the talent is, as a driver is there, it's adapting to NASCAR. I'm trying to remember if I believe something broke on the number nine that week. Very unfortunate. But just as I was saying of even these other teams, they are more competitive, so we're seeing that mixture of good runs, not just a bad finish, a start and park, as we used to see back in the day. You know, as you mentioned, with the exception of Bristol, we're talking about that, of there were six cars on the lead lap. We've had some races this year where out of 36 to 40 starters, there are 33, 34 running, possibly even on the lead lap. So there, again, anything can happen in one little slip up and you can be not out of the race, but still be at the tail end of the field because everybody's still out there running. And I think that's a big thing when it comes to the parity. We've been talking about the streaks of different winners or whatever. All of that is leading to what I look at the future of racing as good, positive things and mixing it up. So I'm really looking forward to it this weekend. Road course racing does tend to lend itself to those who are more skilled at it, but because we now have, what did I say, five this year on the Cup Series schedule, we've been as high as seven or eight, I think, in the past few years. And this goes back to even Dale Earnhardt, I think, was one of the first to recognize it. You can't throw away these road course races. Everybody has put a focus on, I need to be a better road course racer, especially when we went to stage racing. Talk about getting stage points throughout a race and those bonus points. You can't afford to just use that as a throwaway race and give up those points. You've got to be competitive to stay with it for the season-long championship now.
Yeah, I would say that this also speaks to the fact that NASCAR is a popular sport. And I think it also points to the fact that NASCAR drivers are getting some of the prestige or recognition for their skill that maybe was lacking in the past. So it could be a little bit of a turn, if you will, on NASCAR perception of NASCAR drivers. You go back to the early days, I think a lot of people were having fun and enjoying the race. It was a Southern sport, and a lot of people thought it was kind of a hick thing to do, if you will. And I think that's changed a great deal. I don't think this is the case anymore. I think the fact when NASCAR decided to go racing outside of their region or across the United States and even in other countries, I think that they introduced NASCAR to a much wider audience. And I think that these drivers that are racing in these other countries, if they've accomplished their goal in the series that they're racing and they're looking for what do they want to do next, and I think a lot more drivers are doing that. And I think that the fact that so many of these drivers are coming to NASCAR speaks to the talent of these drivers. And I think it's about time because they are talented drivers. They race on a wide variety of tracks. They don't have one type of racetrack that they're racing on. They're racing on a wide variety of tracks, and they have to learn to adapt to those different kind of racetracks. And a lot of these drivers have raced on only one type of racetrack. So they see this as an opportunity to enhance their skills and make them better race car drivers. So I really like that fact. And it makes me proud to be someone who enjoys the NASCAR and can recognize the kind of skill level that we have and the kind of drivers that we have and their talent. And I guess that's why I get so frustrated when that we have those occasions when they're not showcasing their talent on the track. It frustrates me a little bit because they are so talented, and to resort to just straight out, you know, taking another driver out in order to win I think it just it diminishes the talent that they have. So why would you want to do that? I just don't get it. You know, it is what it is, and I know we have that on occasion, and I think frustration plays more into that than anything. But I really like the direction that NASCAR is going. I have really positive feelings about NASCAR right now and where they're headed. I think the leadership is making good decisions. They're willing to try things, and if they fail, they fail, but they're willing to try those things, and I give them a lot of kudos for that. Because a lot of organizations wouldn't even try, but NASCAR is. And I think that's a positive thing for the sport overall. So what do you think about that, Jim?
I think I could feel that one coming as that soapbox was sitting in the corner and you saw it and you kind of brought it over and then you kind of put a foot on it. And then, no, and I understand that there's a certain point of, you're right, to showcase the talent. I can get out there and run over somebody. I don't disagree with that. But I also think there is that, and you know, you and I do differ on this, of the bump and run or the nudge, a little bit of rub and race.
You brought me to your side a little bit closer, though, Jay.
Right. Well, and there is a line, and where that line is, obviously we talk about Mark Martin, Martin Truex, and I know this isn't even under the topic no more, but this is one you and I always come back to. I mean, they wouldn't at all. Their line was, don't do it. You know, others are, okay, mm-hmm. I can bump them or nudge them. Other ones, I can use the chrome horn and move them out of my way by any means necessary. That line is in there, you know, and I go back to not as a driver, but specific incidences that pop into my head. Denny Hamlin and Chase Elliott at Martinsville, mm-hmm. and I happen to be there live. When the tires of the car in front of you are up off the ground, that's way over the line.
Yeah, that is over the line.
But yeah, I don't know that anybody disputed except maybe Denny Hamlin that said that wasn't over the line. You know, Ross Chastain is a great example because I think a lot of times there, as he puts it, he makes it difficult on some. He is right in that area of that line because he's aggressive, no matter who's in front of him, whatever. From that aspect, and I like that. Has there been occasions where he has crossed that line then? If you're that close to it, I would have to say yes. There is a line, and it's not a hard line because, like I said, there's some drivers that if you touch me, you're over the line, and they stand by that, and that's good on them. You can't take anything away from them with that. But going back to the stars that are coming in for this weekend with Dakota, the road course racing. You mentioned that of the crossover. I think that has also now started to go, and I know we went through a stretch of it with a few drivers, but the NASCAR drivers that have or will make a shot at the Indianapolis 500. That one's extremely difficult because of the one-day turnaround mm-hmm. of two races in the same day, not just a weekend, one day. But we've seen Kurt Busch do it, Jimmy Johnson, and again, Jimmy did it on his own terms as far as after the fact, but Kyle Larson is going to do it this year. I know Kurt Busch had mentioned wanting to run at least one Formula One race. We talk about it with the Project 91, kind of led by HMS of, and for the life of me, I cannot come up with the name, the race in Monaco, where Project 91 entered.
I can't think of it either.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
I want to say Monaco Grand Prix, but I don't think that's it.
Yeah, because isn't it a 24 hours of Le Mans, right?
Oh, there you go.
Okay. All right, so that too, I mean, it's not just, oh, these drivers need to come to NASCAR to prove something. These NASCAR drivers are wanting to go over and compete with and show. Yeah, so it's all in all good for motorsports and racing, not just NASCAR. And I think
that's
is a huge win for racing.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out because that is true. I kind of presented the one side of it. But there is the other side of that, and I think it is so true. And it does improve their skills. and I applaud them for doing those kind of things. Are we ready to move on to the next one?
Yeah, if you saw, I threw one up. I don't know if you had seen it, and I knew I'd seen it either last night or this morning. I did want to make sure that a new Xfinity driver, I say new Xfinity driver, a driver going in back into the Xfinity series here.
Ah, I see it. You want to go ahead and start?
All right. Matt DiBenedetto. I know there's been some talk and not happened. Things didn't develop, but Matt DiBenedetto is now in for, it says full, I'm sorry, it says driving a partial schedule. I believe, let me verify this, the plan is for them to run the rest of the season. It says somewhere I read full season, but they've already started anyway. Matt DiBenedetto will drive Viking Motorsports number 38 in the Xfinity Series. It says at this point at least five races starting at Richmond Raceway on March 30th. Matt DiBenedetto and Don Sackett, owner of Viking and the CEO of SciApps Incorporated, is the team. So,
yeah, I think that's pretty exciting to see Matt DiBenedetto come back into the Xfinity Series. I think I said from the beginning that I thought it would be good for Matt DiBenedetto to come to the Xfinity or the Truck Series full time. And I'm sure that they're starting out with five races, like you mentioned, starting at Richmond. But if they get more sponsorship, he might even be able to run the rest of the season, which I think would be fantastic. The news comes after the 38 field, after the number 38 fielded in collaboration with RSS Racing and failed to qualify for two of the first four races of the season with CJ McLaughlin behind the wheel. So it's kind of a driver change, if you will, that they're making in this particular case. But I think Matt DiBenedetto is a great choice, and I hope that they can be competitive. I know Matt DiBenedetto is one of those drivers that can get a lot out of his car, but I'd like to see Matt DiBenedetto run for a championship in the Xfinity Series. I think he could do it in the Xfinity Series. He tried it in the Truck Series last year and didn't quite become a contender for a championship, but it'll be fun to see what he does here in the Xfinity Series and see if he can take that organization to a point that they could perhaps be competitive in the playoffs go for that championship. And if not this year, maybe next year. Maybe they can secure, if he has a good year this season with Viking Motorsports for these for this season, maybe he can run full-time next year and go for a championship. We'll have to see what happens. I would love to see it.
Well, I would too. He has always been one of my favorite drivers. You mentioned the Truck Series last year. They actually did make the playoffs. He was with the number 25 Rackley War. I believe that was second or third year that Matt DiBenedetto had, and they were progressing, had gotten themselves into the playoffs as a championship eligible. However, as you said, contender wasn't quite there, as I believe that they were eliminated in the first round, and DiBenedetto and the team had already announced they were splitting. With that, of after they were knocked out of the playoffs, they decided to go ahead and do so there and fill in the rest of the season with other drivers. Really thought he would get something earlier in the year. I know a deal was kind of all but signed and some things happened and it didn't get done, unfortunately, to start the season. So as you mentioned, he is not eligible for the Xfinity Series Championship because he has not attempted to qualify. We saw that a few years back with Grant Enfinger. And I'm not happy with that, but I'll leave that one alone for today. What I do like, and I look at, we talk about Kurt Busch. We've seen him bounce from team to team throughout his career, making a team better when he comes to them. That's the reason that this call is made, because they know the talent and skill of Matt DiBenedetto as a driver to help elevate their team. And we've seen that with teams he has been with. The Wood Brothers, again, had come really close to being a playoff eligible team with Matt DiBenedetto there with them. That didn't happen. Went to Rackley War in the Truck Series. Took them 3 years. They became a playoff-eligible team. And I think Matt was maybe looking to get back to the Cup Series based off of that. You can't blame him. And I don't know the details of their decision to split, but we know Matt DiBenedetto in the past has, as he likes to say, bet on himself and taken that chance. So
yeah.
He opted to, from my understanding, I'll say that, of look for other opportunities. Again, they did not develop, didn't come to fruition. This deal has come available. I think he will use it to the best of his ability, and I see him bringing to that team. So they're going to look forward to that team of the organization improving, makes more competitive racing. Hopefully Matt DiBenedetto, again, even if he can't run for the championship, bring them towards the front. People will see that and recognize it, and maybe something else will develop. Or, as you said, if they can continue with that team and sponsorship, that team as a driver and organization combo working, next year they can go full-time and compete for that championship. So I look forward to the development of all parties involved and how that then elevates racing, in this case the Xfinity Series, to another level, another competitive team.
Okay. We'll let that be our last hot topic. And Jay, go ahead and do your sign-off, and then I'll do mine.
All right. You can follow me on Facebook. Facebook is my name, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on X and Instagram. And this weekend, now Saturday, will be our second event at Jackson Motor Speedway, your Capital City Raceway. And it will include the Mississippi State Championship Challenge Series Super Late Models, but that'd be on dirt. I know we talked earlier about Super Late Models. This is a dirt track, so come on out and get dirty with me if you're in the Jackson, Mississippi area.
Okay, and I'll just remind listeners that Jay gave a great interview with Tyler Hudson and on Monday. And that was during the third half hour of the show, if you want to go back and listen to that hear what they had to talk about. There's so much that he was able to cover in that interview that I think a lot of NASCAR fans and race fans in general would really appreciate. And I really want to encourage people to go back and listen to that interview if you haven't heard it already. I am Bamfa Racing Site on Twitter, Bamfa Racing Blog and Radio on Facebook, as well as our website at BamfaRacing.com, where we have the player for the Bamfa Racing Radio show. So I just want to mention that, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier, I am going to be traveling this weekend. I'm headed to Texas. I'm real proud of my son. He's getting ready to launch his second book. The first book was a historical fiction debut novel, if you will, and he won all kinds of awards, of which I'm, again, very proud of him for doing, because he did it the hard way. He didn't know anything about writing. He just set about learning everything he could about it. He wanted to write about Empress Theodora in the Byzantine Empire and give the rest of the story, the rest of her story. It is historical fiction, but I think he filled in the gaps really well with that first book, and I think it showed with the awards that he got from doing that. But he struggled to write that book for so many years because there's a writer structure, a well-known writer structure, that just wasn't working for him when he tried to write Theodora's story. And so he went about studying, and I mean 4 years. This has been a four-year effort, this book. He studied movies, books, TV, all kinds of storytelling venues, and he figured it out how to write his Theodora story and make it a compelling story. And as a result, he came up with what he calls the Heroine's Labyrinth, 18 archetypal designs in hero and led fiction. And so he went about putting that book together over the last 4 years, and it's going to launch this Tuesday for sales. We've been taking pre-sales. He's been talking about it on YouTube. And actually tonight, this Thursday, they're doing a launch party, a virtual launch party on YouTube, and some of his heroes are going to be on that show, people that he learned from, like Christopher Vogler, who wrote The Writer's Journey, which is kind of an explanation of Joseph Campbell's Hero with a Thousand Faces. That was complex and complicated to understand. He made it easy to understand, and it helped Doug a lot in his career. And Hannah B. Harvey, who is more on the academic side of this, he learned a lot from Hannah B. Harvey through her Great Courses program on writing, and examples that she gave there. And so he references both of those writers in his book, and they gave him really good endorsements. And Hannah B. Harvey is going to write a review for him in an academic audience. And it's just so exciting to see him have this kind of success. And this is a nonfiction book that is for people who enjoy storytelling. Doug looks at movies and he analyzes them. And I know there's a lot of people out there that watch movies and do movie analysis, but Doug was looking for something and he found it. It's not something he discovered. It's something that he observed in movies that exist today that nobody's been able to articulate and put it into words. And help writers who are looking for how to write a hero-centric story. And he was able to do that with The Hero's Labyrinth. And I'm just so, so proud of him and what he's accomplished. And that's why I'm bringing it up now. If you like storytelling, if you like the hero and story, I would highly recommend this book. And it is available on Amazon and other outlets. And on Tuesday, if you'd like to get the book and read it, it's a gorgeous book. It's gorgeous on the inside and the out, and it's gorgeous from the perspective that he offers readers about hero-centric stories. He's come up with a really good model that I think is going to be extremely helpful to people who enjoy writing about heroines. And it helped him write an award-winning book with Faraway Birds. So I'm super excited about this one in particular. So I'm off my soapbox again, Jay.
No, that one's a good one to be on. Pass along. I know you're going down there tomorrow. So safe travels and pass along my congratulations, the success and the hard work paying off in achieving a dream. That's really great. So pass along my congratulations.
Yeah, and I'll just mention there is going to be a second and a third book. The Faraway Bird covers the early life of the Empress Theodora. The second and third books are going to go into adulthood and her reign as Empress Theodora in the Byzantine Empire as well. So I'm really looking forward to those two books coming out as well. So super excited. I think he fills in a lot of the holes that nobody's been able or willing to write about. And I think he's going to introduce Empress Theodora to a whole lot of people. So looking forward to the races this weekend. I'll be listening on Saturday as I finish the last leg of my ride into Texas. And I'll be watching from the sidelines on Sunday as we prepare for the launch party on Tuesday. So thanks, everybody. Hope you enjoy your race weekend and what's happening in your life. So we'll call that a checkered flag.
All right. Thank you, Sharon.
Take care, everybody.